Today's program has been brought to you by Kane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit cane5.com.
I'm Grace Bonney of After the Jump, and you're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more. Hey, you're listening to Eat Your Words on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Kathy Arroway, and we're here in Brooklyn. But just yesterday, I was actually upstate, and I can't think of a more perfect guest and more perfect book to talk about today than the book I'm holding right now, because I actually just went apple picking at an orchard, and I have tons of apples in my home. And my guest today has written a book called Apples of Uncommon Character, 123 Heirlooms, Modern Classics, and Little Known Wonders. And it's a wonderful, rich story and history about apples in America. The author is James Beard Award-winning author Rowan Jacobson. Hi, how are you?
Hey, Kathy. Good to be here. I can't think of a more perfect place to be to talk about it.
Thanks so much for joining. And your first book, was it your first book, The Geography of Oysters?
Yeah, it was.
That was a fantastic book. And It really catapulted oysters in my mind as something so special. And I feel like, it is a very complex organism too, but like apples right now is like just the biggest like buzzword in my head right now. Maybe because it's, apple growing season, it's apple picking season, it's apple recipe making season, but they're fascinating. So thanks so much for shedding a light on something that seems so otherwise maybe ordinary.
Yeah, that's kind of one of the reasons I wrote the book, is because we have this idea in our head that the apple is kind of ordinary, and that's kind of a modern idea. Like, for a long time, the apple was, like, core to having a good, fun, full existence.
Mm-hmm. And they're so various, too. This book, portrays. It shows us 123 varieties that many of them I haven't heard of. I'm starting to get more and more accustomed to some of them, such as the ones that I have in front of me right now.
Yeah, you got some nice ones there.
Yeah, so let's see. Now, this one, I'm not sure if we identified yet.
This is our mystery apple here.
Yeah.
it could be a lot of things.
Neon specs are telling me it might be Honeycrisp, because I know they had some at that farm.
Could be. It's a baby Honeycrisp, but it could be a baby Honeycrisp.
Now, I'll tell you that I had a hard time picking these apples. As you might know, it's sort of the end of the season for apple picking, so all the apples remaining were at the tops of the trees.
Yeah, right.
So there was some climbing, there was some rustling, there was some catching, and falling on apples on the ground involved. So that's why I'm not exactly sure what all of these are. But maybe would you like to do a taste test?
Well, this will tell us if it's a Honeycrisp, because obviously the thing about Honeycrisp is
they're crisp.
Crisp, like ultra crisp. I think that's actually a trademark term. So. But anyway, Honeycrisp is famous for its crispness. So let's see what we get here.
Let's see. Is it real Honeycrisp? It sounds crisp.
It's a pretty crisp apple, but it's not a Honeycrisp. Honeycrisps have a unique kind of crispness to it. They're crisp like a Cheeto is crisp.
Okay.
Like they're foamy and they kind of go like poof when you bite into them.
You wrote that they cleave cleanly from your teeth
right.
when they break into the
right.
flesh.
And this didn't do that.
No.
It was a tasty apple though.
Yeah. So Honeycrisps are also known for their sweetness, aren't they? Like one of the sweetest apples too.
People talk about that, but it's funny. They're actually not. Everyone thinks they like the Honeycrisp because of the flavor, but they don't. They like it because of the texture.
Mm.
It's just that the incredible, like, the cells are really big in a Honeycrisp.
Yeah.
So when you, and they're filled with juice. So when you bite into it, it just basically explodes in your mouth.
Hmm.
And juice goes everywhere.
Like, I think of it sort of as a watermelon rind, that really, when you crack it and go break it in half after you're done eating, the red part's off. Yeah.
Exactly. And this is the same deal. If you look at a watermelon rind, you can see the cell. The cells are big enough. You can see the individual cells. Same thing with a Honeycrisp, which is not true with other apples so much.
So Honeycrisp were developed fairly recently, and it seems to follow a sort of trend of more and more crisp, maybe less tart or yeah. more sweet apples?
Yeah. Well, you know, we're here in the Northeast. Where we're headed? We are the last hold. Us in England are the last holdouts in the tart apple, you know, like appreciation society. The rest of the world likes sweet apples without any real tartness. And meaning Asia, West Coast.
What would an apple like that be?
Fuji is. Okay. Well, yeah, Red Delicious and Fuji are probably the...
And Golden Delicious, maybe?
Yep, Golden Delicious. Golden Delicious can be a little tart sometimes, mm-hmm. but Fuji, Gala, Red Delicious, these are all like the Pacific Rim apples that have taken over the world. So we are the weird holdouts out okay. here on the East Coast.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Fuji's, I remember, you know, in my lifetime coming around, and now they're like the dominant apple in the world.
Yeah, Fuji and Gala are like on a world domination campaign.
And those are similar sort of sweet apples.
Very sweet, kind of tropical, only a touch of tartness, if uh-huh. even that. And that's how most people like their apples.
And reading this book, I'm becoming aware of a certain apple connoisseur that I wasn't too aware of before, but it is, am I correct that the sort of sweet apples are sort of like the Bud Light of apples? Like they're sort of banal?
Well, yeah, less complexity of flavor. Oh. Like the great apples, which we haven't seen in supermarkets in decades, or actually we've never seen them in supermarkets, all the apples that have really interesting flavors just did not make the cut because they don't produce as well as the Red
right.
Deliciouses of the world.
So this guy right here, the Winesap.
Winesap, the most important apple the South has ever grown. Should be real crisp. I could hear that.
Yeah. I don't know. It's a little starchy, too. Is that because it's underripe?
Probably underripe.
It has this, like, viscous starchiness that I was noting yesterday. Because I ate, like, I don't know, 8 or 9 apples yesterday while I was picking these.
That's a lot of apples.
Yeah. And then this guy is a Northern Spy.
Northern Spy is just an awesome apple. And that should be pretty crisp and pretty tart. Hey, can I taste that?
Mm-hmm.
That sounded good.
That one's really good. Okay. I want to understand how we came about all these different apple preferences and how they've evolved from like Red Delicious and Granny Smith to what we're seeing right here and going forward. But first things first, a little apple basics. So if I'm holding if I have this tomato that I'm eating, say it's a Brandywine tomato,
okay,
and I want to grow this in my garden, I would take out a seed from this great Brandywine tomato, plant it in my soil next spring, and I'd have that exact Brandywine tomato plant. But if I want to grow, let's say, Macintosh apple tree, I'm eating this great Macintosh apple, I want that tree. I plant in the soil, what happens?
You do not get a Macintosh. You get a tree that produces an apple that the world has never seen before, because every seed in every apple is a unique individual, just like we are. Mm-hmm. So it'll create a unique apple.
So the saying the apple doesn't fall far from the tree is actually not that true.
The apple falls wicked far from the tree, actually. Yeah, that's a good point.
So farmers have learned to produce the apples that they want, like this Winesap or like that Northern Spy, by taking grafting, basically.
Right, yeah. You cut a shoot off the tree, mm-hmm. and you graft it to an existing rootstock. Basically, you're cloning the tree.
Cloning this apple by taking that seedling and grafting it onto something else.
Asexual reproduction. Mm-hmm. As soon as sex is introduced, it all goes to hell. So you got to keep sex out of it.
And that's what we do with pears, apricots, cherry trees. This is grafting is required to create the same type of species or varietal. But apples are a little different, which you point out, in that they spontaneously produce on their own. So left to the wild, at their own devices, apples will still produce these amazing different apples over time.
Right. I mean, you think about most of our other foods, like, you know, corn, cows, whatever. As soon as we stop taking care of them, they pretty much just, like, you know, pack it in. Apples, as soon as we stop taking care of them, they go crazy. They uh-huh. like all those apples, every single one will, you know, get eaten by a bear or a deer or something, and those seeds will all reproduce. Apples have basically never met a climate that they couldn't work with. I just got an email like half an hour ago from a guy who's growing apples in Uganda. Mm-hmm. And he said apples do incredibly well in the African tropics, and that nobody realizes that.
Wow.
So they'll go anywhere.
And this is ancient, too, because people have been learning to graft and produce different varietals of apples that they liked or that grew well in their climate for how long? Thousands.
Definitely thousands. The Romans, they were big into apples. Mm-hmm. They had all their name varieties. And so that was, 2,000 years ago. I think the Chinese, same deal.
And the apples originated around the Tian Shan Mountains and passed through the Silk Road to Western Europe?
Right. They were from those mountains on the border between Kazakhstan and China, which was the Silk Road. So suddenly the traders and their horses were coming through, and apples were like, I can hijack a ride on those guys. Mm-hmm. So they immediately just went all over Europe and all over Asia.
And then flash forward to the Americas. They came from colonists who brought them along. And it sounds like not too many of the early settlers knew much about grafting, but just from having apples and having those different seeds scattered around, you know, spitting the seeds out, chucking the cores here and there, the apples propagated in America.
Like nowhere else. Mm. They'd never kind of had so much virgin territory to work with. And we probably planted millions of seeds throughout the, 1600s, 1700s, 1800s. And so every one of those seedlings was a potential Honeycrisp.
Hmm.
So we had 7,000 varieties of apples by the 1800s.
And was much of this due to a gentleman known as Johnny Appleseed?
What was his deal?
Why was he going around planting apples?
His deal, he was a little weird.
Okay.
His deal was, first it was a money-making scheme. He realized that all these homesteaders were going to need apple trees. In fact, often the homesteading laws required you as a homesteader to plant 50 trees or 100 apple trees.
For longevity, for posterity's
sake. To prove that you were going to be there long-term.
Okay.
So he would go get ahead of the settlers, take his raft down the Ohio River or wherever he was, and he would plant all these little seedling orchards. He would just get seeds for free from cider mills that were making cider.
Oh.
And, they throw out the pulp, and he's like, hey, can I have those seeds? So he'd take the seeds, plant all these orchards ahead of the settlers, and then a few years later, when the settlers arrived and needed their trees, he'd be like, hey, I've got 5,000 apple trees right here.
Oh, so he was kind of like a Johnny Apple seedling.
Right. He was Johnny Nurseryman.
He was like, really. I got a jump start on your apple tree by giving you these different seedlings. Very interesting. And I gather that, once a lot of Americans did begin grafting and selecting apples in their farms, they were named after that farm or the farmer. So we have names like McIntosh for a settler in what state was that? Iowa?
John McIntosh was actually in Ontario.
Ontario.
1811, he noticed these really cool apples on this one tree, this wild tree on his farm.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone liked the apples, so they began calling it the McIntosh. And he was actually one of those guys who didn't understand grafting. So he started selling his apples to people so that they could all have Macintosh trees. And then 6 years later, they came back to him and they're like, hey.
That's really great. Okay, and who was Granny Smith? What's her deal?
Maria Ann Smith was this woman who lived
Please
in Australia.
Please don't tell me she was a sailor. sort of a con artist.
She had an apple conglomerate. No, she, in the 1860s in Australia, she liked apples. She had a compost pile, and mm-hmm. she noticed this apple seedling growing up in her compost pile from some apples that she cores that she had dumped, and she it got left alone long enough that it actually produced fruit, and it produced these big green really tasty apples. So she started spreading the word about those apples, and they became a big deal, and they got named after her, Granny Smith.
Interestingly, I didn't see any Granny Smith apples at the farm I went to.
We don't grow them very much. On the East Coast, almost not at all. They're Australian originally, so they like a hot, dry climate with a lot of sun. So California grows Granny Smiths. Australia grows the best. But Northeast, we're kind of wet and cold for them.
That's interesting. Here's an apple that does come from the Northeast. I believe New York State. And I'm dying to know more about the origin of its name. It's the one you're holding here. Northern Spy. Who is this spy from the north?
Yeah, everybody has wondered. And in fact, there's a restaurant, Northern Spy. which doesn't serve any Northern Spy products.
Well, they might at this time of the year. It's a seasonal menu.
That's true. And some Northern Spy is one of the great cider apples. So hopefully there's some Northern Spy on tap. Yeah, everyone always wondered, why is it called Northern Spy? And because it's a good pie apple, one theory was that it was originally called Northern Pie, right? And that got screwed up. Northern Spice, some people thought, because it's kind of spicy, you know. But I found this letter from somebody in the area back in the 1800s who knew the real story, which is that...
What area was it?
New York? East Bloomfield. So,
upstate. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Finger Lakes.
Yeah, way up there. And which is a great apple area.
Mm-hmm.
So the very first Northern Spy tree appeared there somewhere around 1800. And whoever named it Northern Spy after a novel, the scandalous novel of like the 1830s, 1840s, that was called The Northern Spy. Which was, it was an abolitionist, like a dime store novel.
This was a pulp novel.
Yeah. And the it
about was, a scandalous, sexy Northern spy.
Yeah, he was. He was like straight out of Quentin Tarantino.
Okay.
He would pose as, of course, this is pre-Civil War. He would pose as a slave catcher to meet up with the other slave catchers, and then he would kill them. Right.
Okay.
So I mean, Quentin Tarantino, right?
He would kill the slave catchers
and free the slaves.
Free the slaves.
Yeah. So he was an abolitionist. You know, in the John, back before it was cool, in the John Brown era. The novel was, you know, basically written to further the abolitionist cause.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very scandalous.
Propaganda.
Yeah. And somebody.
Why would they think that, yeah, go on. Why would they think the apple is like this guy?
Well, I mean, taste. Here, I'm going to hand this apple.
I'm going to try to taste the abolitionist apple. Okay. Oh, this oxidizes quickly.
Yeah, it does. That's not as tart as some, but they can be quite tart. They're kind of acerbic apples. They can get very big. They have big shoulders. I picture John Brown when I'm picturing Northern Spy, you know?
I'm thinking of, what's his name? The guy from that movie, Django Unchained. You know, the guy who won the Oscar.
Oh, yeah, the German guy?
Yeah, the German guy.
Yeah.
That's exactly what this apple tastes like. It makes perfect sense.
If he was an apple, he'd,
that's if I could remember his name, that's what he would taste like.
Christoph something.
Walker. Thank you, Liz. Christoph Walker.
Thank you.
I'm going to... Okay, I know you have an apple orchard and I don't, but if you propagate a great tasting apple that has these sturdy, bold characteristics, spicy flavors, I might consider the name Christoph Walker apple.
I'll go for that.
Okay. Just putting that out there.
I could just call it Kathy.
Just planting that seed, so to speak. We're going to cut to a quick little commercial interview and be right back. 10 more.
Electric Latin Soul. Go, go, go.
Listening to Renee Lopez, ELS.
This is Chris Howell from Cane Vineyard and Winery, calling in from Spring Mountain above the Napa Valley. Thank you for listening to this show. In our industrial world of highly processed food and wine, we support the values of Heritage Radio Network. All of us at Cane encourage you to seek out individuality and beauty in everything you eat and drink. To learn more about us, go to cane5.com.
This is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, and you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
All right, we're back chatting more with author Rowan Jacobson, a James Beard Award-winning author who has a new book out called Apples of Uncommon Character. Thanks to our producer, Liz, for correcting me. That last apple that that I want to name in vain of the Northern spy apple named for an abolitionist character in a fiction is the actor from Django Unchained is actually Christoph Waltz. My bad. So talking about all these different apple varieties and how they've come about and the newer ones like Honeycrisp, what about some that have just been lost? Have we lost any apple varieties along the way?
Oh, man, we've lost more than we've saved. Like I said, there were probably 7,000 varieties back in the 1800s.
America, yeah.
Yeah, just in America, and probably another 5,000 around the world.
Who knows, yeah.
And then by, when we were kids, when we went to a supermarket, there were, what, three, two?
Granny Smith, Red Delicious, maybe Golden Delicious.
Yeah, maybe Golden. And many varieties, especially Prohibition. Prohibition was rough on apples because so many of these apples were specifically...
used for cider.
Yeah, for spiders and cider.
Right now is Cider Week, not Spider Week.
Right, Spider Week
in New York
week.
City. So check out the events lined up for that.
Yeah, and a lot of those apples that were only for fermenting into alcoholic cider got chopped down.
Gone. Well, at least we have Northern Spies.
We
or
do.
Spice.
We still have the Northern Spies.
Or pie.
The Christoph Waltz apple.
We've got varieties that have come about, but what about the preferences? Like, so why did we choose Red Delicious? I mean, everyone I seem to meet is in agreement that this is the worst apple in the history of apples. That they're mealy, they don't taste like anything. The skin is so thick. I mean, they look really nice, but...
Well, and you nailed it right there. This is an apple that's for looking, not eating.
Oh.
Yeah. It looks great. It's so deeply red, midnight red, as they call it in the industry. But, it tastes terrible, but people kept buying them, and they could last for months in a store.
Oh, I see.
So,
are they also easier to grow? Because I noticed that some of these varieties are harder to grow than others.
Definitely.
Some of these heirlooms.
Yeah. And not even just the heirlooms. A Honeycrisp is a pretty hard apple to grow.
That's why they're more expensive.
Yeah.
I see. The Honeycrisp, how did that... That's a fairly recent one, and it's really taken the apple crates by storm, it seems. Everyone I seem to meet, that's their favorite apple.
I know.
Who is responsible for this genius crisp apple?
A guy named David Bedford at the University of Minnesota. University of Minnesota is like the big upstart in the apple breeding world. Cornell, here in New York, was always the dominant player. And they would name all their apples really boring things like Liberty and Empire.
Uh-huh.
And or Cortland.
I have one right here. This Empire.
Yeah, that's an Empire, yeah. Definitely. And then University of Minnesota came along and started naming all their apples as if they were strippers, right? So Honeycrisp, Sweet Tango, Zestar, Sweet 16, you know?
Really?
Like Cornell's like, you can't name an apple that. And then, of course, everybody's like, I love those names. So now... So Cornell's new apples coming out this year are Snapdragon and Ruby Frost. So they've gotten on board on the stripper name.
All right. Well, those do sound pretty exciting. And maybe a name is a big reason for Honeycrisp's success.
It was a really good name.
It's a really good name.
But then, you know, they named their heir to the Honeycrisp, Sweet Tango, with a capital T in the middle. So I think they kind of might have lost their naming mojo.
I did see that, and I thought it sounded like... I don't know, like a brand name or something. It was a little too much for me.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. All right. So, okay. So I have a lot of apples now. Best apple for pies.
Well, you got it right there. The Northern Spy.
The Northern Spy?
Yeah.
Really?
If you're going to make a pie with just one apple, it should be Northern Spy.
What about the Empire and the Rome? Isn't that a good baking apple?
Yeah. Rome was called Baker's Buddy.
Baker's Buddy.
Because it was such a good baking apple. Empire is solid, too. But, you know, actually...
It looks like a snow white apple, this one.
That's a pretty apple.
Beautiful. And I love
really
how...
Is.
I'm going to bite it just to see the color.
That sounded pretty crisp. Oh, there you go. You're getting a little red in there.
So, I'm like, showing it to the microphone. It's sort of like
show it
magenta.
To the people out there. Can they see us?
They're eating pizza. They don't care about apples. It's like magenta. The skin has so much... oomph to it that it's bleeding all over the flesh. What do you call that? Is that tannins?
I call it oomph.
Okay.
No, it's actually anthocyanins, which is the pigment that makes raspberries red as well. So you kind of get the flavor and the color kind of go together.
And the skin is where a lot of the vitamins are in apple. So does redder or deeper colors mean that it's going to have more vitamins or different ones?
That's a great question. Well, more pigment, more antioxidants, perhaps.
Okay.
Apples, they're all high in vitamin C, and probably the more acid, the higher.
All right. So best apple for cider?
That's a highly, debated question.
Okay.
But there's one, Northern Spy.
I hate
to keep going back to Northern Spy, but it's a superb
versatile
cider apple. Yeah. Eve's Cidery, which is a New York State cider maker, they've got a Northern Spy that's in town for Cider Week this week.
Oh, cool.
That's really good.
Eve's Cidery. All right. I got to check out their cider pretty soon. This is hard cider we're talking about, right?
Yeah, we're talking hard cider.
All right. Okay. Maybe Northern Spy is on its way to an all-around gold, but best apple for just eating, in your opinion?
Northern Spy is solid, but you can do better.
Okay.
Well, some people love the Honeycrisp, and but that same crispness existed in an apple from the 1920s called Macoun or Macoun.
Yes. Those are so juicy.
They are so juicy and so crisp. They're
and
like
kind of mild tasting too, right?
Yeah, not a strong flavor, which is also something the Honeycrisp has. It's kind of just, it's like tart enough, sweet enough, but kind of dilute enough to be refreshing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a drink almost.
Yeah, Macoun. I always thought it was Macoun. Okay.
Well, yeah, everyone thinks it's Macoun, but it was actually named after an apple grower from Canada. So,
from Canada?
It's Macoun, eh?
Okay. Well, those are good apples, too. I'm too bad I didn't see any of those. Okay, so best apple for, what about just regular cider that is not hard?
You know, Macintosh is actually really good for that.
Oh, they're juicy, right?
Super juicy, and they kind of have that, like, spicy flavor to them.
Mm-hmm.
They just tend to, they also have thick skin, and they tend to go soft pretty quick.
Yes.
So not,
oh, gross.
Right. They get mealy. But pressing for cider, they're perfect.
Oh, that's a good use for them.
Yeah.
And I believe I once made a pie or some sort of baked good that I used Macintosh. They were not too good. I think because they're just kind of watery.
Yeah, they just turned to mush. But actually, if you're making a pie, the best pie has a mix of apples, like maybe 3 to 5 kinds that all do different things.
Because
you need like the bricks and the mortar in your pie. So the bricks would be really firm apples. But then the mortar would be like a Macintosh, a little bit of glue that'll hold it all together.
Can I make a crust, an apple pie that has crusts of a different type of apple, and then the filling's one type of apple, and then the top crust is maybe a different kind of apple? Is that what you're
saying? Ooh, you could do that. That would be pretty impressive.
So the starchiest apples on the bottom.
Right.
The gooeyest one.
On the top and kind of melting down into it.
I'm not good enough at baking to make this a reality, but
it's a good idea. I'm going to explore that.
That's cool. I believe that cider, isn't that usually just an amalgam of all the apples in an orchard that are pressed? Or is cider usually separated between different varietals?
Yeah, they'll often do, just like press everything that's left over.
Because it's a good way of getting rid of sort of bruised ones, right?
Right. But if you want to have the best flavored cider in the world, you'd be very specific. And there's certain varieties. Like there's one called sheep nose or black gilliflower that has a clove-like flavor.
Mm-hmm.
So you press some of that into your cider, and it makes the cider really great and like almost like Indian spice kind of a style of cider.
Wow, that sounds great. I got to taste more ciders for this cider week going on right now. Okay, so what about the Gala and the, what's it called, the Fuji apples that we find in the grocery store? What are they best for?
They're definitely for fresh eating. Anything else, and they kind of just like fall apart.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
Yeah.
All right.
They're best for really throwing at people.
You're not such a fan of these apples.
Well, actually, Gala can be really good when it's straight off the tree, but often when you get in a store, it's been kicking around for a while and it's just flat.
Now, we didn't talk too much about this, but and I did happen to pick some Fuji apples at Wilkla Orchard yesterday. But most of the apples that we'll see in the store are from Washington State because they grow, 90% of America's apples?
Yeah, Washington State dominates because it's all eastern Washington on the east side of the Cascades. Super dry. It's a desert. They get, 4 inches of precipitation a year. And so it's all irrigated.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, apples can grow really well in that kind of environment. They get tons of sun. They get super red. They get super sweet.
So that's why we see a lot of them. But this time of the year, we have apples from New York State and the Northeast in general.
Yeah, which have a more complicated flavor because of our complicated climate.
And our complicated community.
Exactly.
Of people in New York. Okay, so do you have a best overall apple? Just favorite apple of the moment?
Okay, all right. If you're really just going to find, look for one apple out there.
Yeah, the ultimate apple snobs, maybe apple or? No?
Yeah.
Is that a different thing?
Okay. Cox's Orange Pippin.
Okay. Orange.
It has kind of an orangey flavor to it. Hmm. It's an old British apple.
Hmm.
And there's a couple others that go with it that are kind of in the same category called Orleans Rainette and Darcy Spice.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. Now, Cox was the name of the farmer. Orange was the name of the color. And Pippin?
A pip is a seed. Like, you know, pip in Great Expectations.
Okay.
Like, anyway, so a pippin is a tree, a seedling that grew from a pip.
Oh, okay. That's a really cute name. So it's Mr. Cox's apple seedling.
Exactly.
I'm going to look out for those.
Do. It's worth it.
All right. And to check out more rare, interesting, amazing, incredible apples and learn more about the history of apples, definitely check out Rowan's new book, Apples of Uncommon Character. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Kathy.
And just to let you guys know, for Cider Week, Rowan will be appearing at a couple upcoming dinners. There's one at the Farm on Adderley Tuesday.
Yeah, Farm on Adderley on Tuesday night, and the Pines tonight, Sunday, and then Back 40 West on Monday.
Back 40 West. Definitely check that out. And thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks. It was fun.
Thanks, everyone at Heritage. We'll see you next week on Eat Your Words.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.